and he all but cried them out, "But I do care!" He did but barely stop them, for how could he say such a thing out before all these guards and before this woman? "Loose her from those bonds!" he shouted suddenly. Without a word they loosed her, and she stood free, and they all waited to see what she would do, and Wong the tiger waited also. She stood there as though she were still bound, and she did not move. Then Wong the tiger called out to her sharply, "You are free. You may go where you will." But she answered, "Where shall I go, seeing I have no home anywhere?" And saying this, she lifted up her head and looked at Wong the tiger with a sudden, seeming simplicity. At that look, the sealed fountain in Wong the tiger was unstopped, and such a passion rushed out into his blood that he began to tremble within his soldier's clothes. Now it was his eyes that dropped before hers. Now she was stronger than he. The room was filled with the air of this passion that had been stopped so long, and men stirred uneasily and stared at each other. Suddenly Wong the tiger remembered they were there, and he roared at them, "Get you gone, every one of you, and stand outside the door." They went away then, crestfallen, for they saw well enough what had befallen their general, even that which may befall any man, high or low. They went out then, and waited upon the threshold. When there were none but these two left in the hall, Wong the tiger leaned forward out of his carven seat, and he said in a hard, hoarse voice, "Woman, you are free. Choose where you will go, and I will send one to take you there." And she answered simply, with all the boldness gone out of her, except that she could look at him in the eyes while she said it, "I have chosen already. I am your bondswoman." Chapter 17. If Wong the tiger had been a coarse and common man, and without feeling for what was lawful and decent, he might have taken this woman, since she had no father or brother or any man to stand for her, and he might have done as he liked with her. But that hour in his youth which had been like a blow upon his heart made him fastidious still, and it made his pleasure more keen to think he could wait, with all his passion, until he could have her as a wife. Moreover, he wanted her as wife, for mingled with all his personal passion for her, which fell more deeply on him hour by hour, was the craving also to have a son by her, his son, his first-born son. And only a true wife can bear a man his true son. Yes, half of the exaltation of his secret longing for her was this, to think what a sum they would form between them, he with his power and great tall body and all he had to bestow, and she with her fox-like beauty and her spirit of fearlessness. To Wong the tiger, when he dreamed of it, it seemed his son lived already. In great haste, then, he called his hair-lipped trusty man, and he bade him thus, "Go to my brothers and tell them I want my share of the silver that was left to me when I should want to wed. I need it now for my marriage, for I have set my will upon this woman. Tell them to give me 1,000 pieces of silver, for I have presents to give her, and my men must have a very great feast on such a day, and I must buy myself a new robe fit for the day. But if he gives you 800, come back with it, and do not delay for the rest. And bid my brothers come and see the marriage too, they and all they care to bring with them." The trusty man listened to this in greatest consternation, and his lower jaw hung hideously, and he stammered forth in an agony, "Oh, my general! Oh, my captain, to that fox! But take her for a day, a time, not wed!" "Be silent, fool!" Wong the tiger roared at him then, starting up from his seat at the man. "Did I ask your counsel? I will order you beaten like a common criminal!" The man hung his head, then silent. But tears rose into his eyes, and he went on his errand very heavily, for he felt the woman would bring his master nothing but evil, and he muttered many times as he went along the road, "Yes, and I have seen these fox women. Yes, and my general will never believe any evil I tell him. These fox women do always fasten themselves on the best men. It is always so." Thus he went along the road, his feet stirring the dust that lay thick through the dry winter days. And men passing him stared at him curious because of his muttering, and because of his tears that rolled down his cheeks sometimes without his knowing it. And when they saw he paid no heed to anything except what was in his own heart, they set him down as mad. and gave him the wider half of the road. But when this trusty man came with his message to Wang the merchant, that one was, for once, startled out of his secret calm, and he looked up from his table where he sat casting up accounts, for the trusty man, finding him not at his house, had come straight to his grain shop, and there he was at his desk in a corner behind the counters. He looked up and said in agitation, his pen arrested in his hand, "But how can I suddenly withdraw so much money from the places where I have it loaned out? My brother ought to tell me when he is betrothed, and so give me warning of a year or two. Such haste is scarcely decent in a wedding." Now Wang the Tiger knew his brother, and how loath he was to part with money, and so he had also told his trusty man before he went, "If my brother delays, you are to press him to the point, and tell him plainly I will have the money if I have to come and fetch it myself. I will carry this thing through in 3 days after you return, and you are not to be away more than 5. There is need for haste, for I do not know how long it will be before I have an army march down on me from above, for I cannot hope to remain unnoticed when the provincial ruler hears what I did in these courts. He will send men against me even, and there can be no feasting and wedding on a battlefield." Now it was true enough that what Wang the Tiger had done by violence he must expect to be heard in the courts above him, and it was true that he might be punished. But there was a deeper truth than this, and it was that Wang the Tiger was so hungry for this woman, he could not wait for her longer than he must, and he knew he was useless as a warrior until he could have her safely for himself, and so set his mind free for something else. Therefore he had urged his trusty man, and he grew fierce in his urging, and he added, "Well, I know that merchant brother of mine will howl that he has his money where he cannot get it. You are not to heed him. Tell him I have my sword still, and the very swift and fine sword that I took from the leopard when I killed him." But the trusty man kept this threat as a last resort, and he did not use it up at the first, and not until Wang the merchant seemed about to delay on another score, and it was that it was a shame to the family to wed into it a woman who had no family and no home, and had been a trollop, perhaps, as such women are. But the trusty man did not tell him it was a woman out of a robber's lair. No, although he was sorely tempted to tell it and tempted to hold back the woman by any means, yet he knew Wang the Tiger well enough to know he would have what he set himself to have, and so he used his threat. Then Wang the merchant had to scour about and get what silver he could, and he was in great distress of mind that he was compelled to call in money suddenly like this and lose its interest, and he went very gloomily to his elder brother and said, "The sum of money due our younger brother for his marriage he calls for now, and he's going to wed some trollop or other whom we have never heard of. He is more like you than me, after all." Wang the landlord scratched his head at this and cast about for an answer, and then decided on peace, and he said, "It is a strange thing, for I thought he would call upon us when he felt the need and when he was established, and ask us to betroth him properly, since our father is dead, who should have done it for him. Yes, I had a maid or two in mind, even." And in his heart he thought that surely he would have chosen a maid better than anyone else, seeing he knew women so well, and all the best maids, at least by hearsay, who were in the town. But Wang the merchant had been driven very irritable with the exigency, and he sneered and said, "Be sure you have a maid or two in mind, but that is nothing to me. The thing is, what can you give of this 1,000 he wants? For I have no such great amount of cash to take out of my girdle suddenly like this." Wang the elder stared heavily at his brother then, and he sat staring with his hand on his fat knees, and he said huskily, "You know all I have. I never have any ready silver. Sell a piece of my land again." Then Wang the merchant groaned a little, for it was not a good time to sell before the new year, and he had counted on the harvests of wheat to which the land was all planted. But after he had gone back to his shop and had fingered his abacus a while and cast up his loss and profit, he found it would pay him to sell more land rather than to draw his money out of the places of high interest where he had it. And so he sold a fair field, and when he let it be known, many came to buy of him. He sold the land for 1,000 pieces and a little odd sum over, but he gave the trusty man only 900 pieces, and held back the rest, lest Wang the Tiger demand more. But the trusty man was a simple fellow, and he remembered that his master told him he was not to delay for 100 pieces or so, and he went away with what he had. And Wang the merchant hastened to put out at interest what had not been asked for, and he was a little comforted that he had saved this much, at any rate. There was but one untoward thing in this transaction he made, and it was that when he sold the land, he sold a piece or two not far from the earthen house, and Pear Blossom happened to be out on the threshing floor in front of the house. When she saw the knot of men gathered about the field, she shaded her eyes with her hand and looked through the sunshine, and she knew what was being done. She hastened then to Wang the merchant's side and motioned him back a little from the others, and she opened her eyes with reproach and said to him, "Again, do you sell the land?" But Wang the merchant would not be troubled with her when he had so much else to trouble him, and he said, bluntly, "My younger brother is to be wed, and there is no other provision for the sum that is rightfully his for such a purpose except to sell a piece." Then Pear Blossom shrank back in the strangest way, and she said no more. No, she went slowly back to the house, and from that day on her life narrowed itself yet more. And what time she did not spend in caring for her two children, as she called them always, she spent assiduously in listening to the nuns who came to visit her, and she besought them now to come every day. Yes, even in the morning, when it was ill luck to see a nun, and many will spit upon a nun if she cross their path before noon, because it is so ill an omen, Pear Blossom welcomed them always. Eagerly she forswore eating any more meat her whole life long, and it was not hard for her either, because she had always shrunk so from taking any life at all. Yes, such was such an one that even on a hot summer's night she would close the lattices so that the moths would not fly in and burn themselves in the candle flames, and this she counted as the saving of life. Her greatest prayer was that the fool might die before her, so that she need never use the packet of white poison that Wang Lung had left to her to use if she must. She learned of these nuns, and far into the night she told off her prayers, and she had always wrapped about her wrist the little rosary of beads of fragrant wood. This was all her life. Now after the trusty man had gone, Wang the merchant and Wang the landlord consulted together as to whether they ought or not to go to their brother's wedding. They each longed to share such success as he had had, but the trusty man had made much of the need for haste, lest a battle be made by those above, and so the brothers were afraid also, because they did not know how strong Wang the tiger was, and whether, if he lost, he would be heavily punished, and they perhaps entangled in the punishment because they were his brothers. Wang the landlord longed especially to go and see what sort of a woman his younger brother had, for the trusty old man told enough to whet his interest. But when his lady heard of the affair, she said gravely, "It is a very strange and unusual thing to have such a brawl as we have heard. No, if he is punished by those above him in the state, then we may be all punished. For I have often heard it told that if a man commits a crime of rebellion against the state, his family may be killed even to the very ninth removed cousin." It was true that in the past such punishments were made, when kings and emperors strove to sweep the country clean of crimes, and Wang the landlord has seen such things told in plays, and he had heard of them in storytellers' booths, where he loved to pass time away, so that now, although he was too high for such low pastimes, and dared not join a common crowd in such a place, he still listened eagerly if a passing storyteller came into the tea-house to tell his tale. Now, remembering, he turned yellow with fright, and he went to Wang the merchant and said, "We had better have some sort of a signed paper saying our brother was an unfilial son, so that we have cast him out of our house, so that if he fails in a battle or is punished, we will not be entangled with him, we and our sons." And he thought to himself at that moment that he was glad his son had not wanted to go after all, and he took pleasure in pitying his brother and saying, "I do feel for you with your own son in such a danger." Now, although Wang the merchant merely smiled, yet when he had thought a while, it seemed to him a good, cautious thing to do. So he wrote a paper saying how and in what ways Wang the Third, nicknamed the Tiger, had been unfilial, and no longer belonged to the house. And he had his elder brother sign it first, and then he signed it, and he took it to the magistrate's court, and paid a sum of money to have it secretly stamped. Then he took the deed and put it safely away where none might find it unless he needed it. Thus the two brothers felt safe, and they looked at each other when they met in the tea-house one morning, and Wang the landlord said, "Why should we not go and feast merrily now, seeing we are safe?" But before they could consider it, for they were not men who at their age could take a journey easily. There came a rumor over that whole region, told from mouth to mouth, and it was that the ruler of the province had heard with great wrath that some small country upstart, half robber, half runaway soldier from an old southern general, had seized the seat of government in one of the counties, and an army was to be sent against him to capture him. This ruler was responsible to those yet higher than he, and if he did not manage this affair, he would be blamed. When this rumor came filtering through from wayside inn and tea houses, and be sure there were those who ran with pleasure to tell it to the two brothers, then Wang the landlord and Wang the merchant gave up their plans speedily, and each stayed close in his house for a time, and each was glad he had not boasted too soon that he had had a brother in a high place, and it was a comfort to them to think of the paper, signed and stamped at court. If anyone spoke of their third brother before them, Wang the landlord said loudly, "He has been wild and runaway all his days." And Wang the merchant drew his meager lips together and said, "Let him do what he likes, for it does not concern us, and he is scarcely our brother." Wang the tiger was in the midst of his wedding feast when this rumor reached him also, and in the midst of 3 days of mighty feasting throughout the courts. He had ordered the killing of cows and pigs and fowls, and he ordered everything to be paid for as it was taken to be killed. Although he was so strong in this region now that he could have taken what he liked without price, and none would have dared to withstand him, yet because he was a just man, he paid for all. This justice moved the common people toward him very much, so that they praised him to each other, and man said to man, "There could be far worse than this lord of war who rules over us. He is strong enough to keep robbers away, and he does not rob us himself beyond the taxes, and I do not see that we could ask for more than this under heaven." But still, at this time, they did not come out too openly for him yet, because they had heard the rumor also, and they waited to see if he could be victorious or not, for if he lost, they would be blamed if they had showed loyalty to him. But if he gained, then they could take courage to come out for him. Still, they had let Wang the tiger take what he needed for the feast, although it taxed the people much to feed so many at a time, and he would have the best for once, and he had better than the best even for himself and his bride and his trusty men and the women who cared for the bride. These women were some half-score of those about the courts, the wife of the jailer and of such harmless persons who do not care who is over them, and they came creeping back to their places the next day after the overthrow, ready to swear loyalty to anyone who fed them. And Wang the tiger would have these women properly about his bride, for he was very careful toward her and did not go near her for the days before he married her. No, although he could not sleep at times in the night for thinking of her, and wondering who she was, and burning for her. But stronger than this was the feeling he had for her to make her the mother of his son, and it seemed to him it was his duty to his son to be careful in all he did. Different indeed was she from Pear Blossom, and because of that early image of a woman set into his memory, he had always thought, if he thought, that he would like mild, pale women best. But now he did not care, and he said to himself wildly that he did not care who she was nor what, so that he had her, and had her sealed to him forever through their son. During those days no one came near him for anything, for his trusty men saw that he was wholly given over to his desire. But they consulted together secretly, for they had heard the rumor, and they put their strength to hastening the wedding, so that it could be over and their leader slaked, and ready to be himself, and lead them on when the need came. More quickly, then, than Wang the tiger even could hope, the feasts were prepared, and the wife of the jailkeeper stood for the woman, and the courts were thrown open to all such as cared to come, and see, and feast. But few men of the city came, and fewer women, because they were afraid. Only the homeless ones, and such as live nowhere and have nothing to lose, came in, as any may come into a marriage, and ate heartily, and stared their fill at the strange bride. But when they went in to fetch the old magistrate and bring him to a seat of honor on such a day, as Wang the tiger had commanded should be done, he sent out word that he grieved he could not come, for he had a flux and could not rise from his bed. As for Wang the tiger, throughout the day of his wedding he moved in a dream, and he scarcely knew what he did except that the hours of the day moved so slowly that he did not know what to do with himself. It seemed to him that every breath he drew lasted an hour, and that the sun would never crawl up the sky to noon, and when it had, that it would stay forever. He could not be merry as men are at their weddings, for he had never been merry. And now he sat as silent as ever, and there was not one to joke at his expense. He thirsted exceedingly all that day, and he drank much wine, but he could eat nothing, for he was as full as though he had eaten a mighty meal. But into the courts of feasting, men and women and the crowds of poor and ragged and the dogs from the street came in by scores to feast, and to pick and to eat the bones that were left. And in his own room Wang the Tiger sat silent and half-smiling, as in a dream. And so the day wore on at last, tonight. Then when the women had prepared the bride for the bed, he went into her room, and she was there. It was the first woman he had ever known. Yes, this was a curious, unheard-of thing, that a man could come to be more than 30 years old and be a soldier and a runaway from his father's house since he was 18, and never had he gone near a woman. So sealed his heart had been. But that fountain was flowing free now, and naught could ever seal it again. And seeing this woman sitting there on the bed, he drew his breath in sharply. And she, hearing it, lifted her eyes and looked at him fully. So he went to her, and he found her silent, but passionate and frank upon her marriage bed. And he loved her mightily from that hour. And since he had known no other, she seemed to him faultless. Once in the middle of the night, he turned to her, and he said in a husky whisper, "I do not even know who you are." And she answered calmly, "What does it matter except that I am here? But sometime I will tell you." And he let it pass, content for the time, for they were neither of them usual folk, and both their lives were not such as are commonly lived. But the trusty man did not let Wang the Tiger have more than the night, and the next morning at dawn they waited for him, and they saw him come out of his door, calm and refreshed from his marriage chamber. Then the hair-lipped man said, bowing, "Sir, and honored, we did not tell you yesterday since it was a day of joy, but we have heard rumors from the south, and the provincial ruler has heard that you have seized the government and comes down against you." And the hawk said in his turn, "I heard it from a beggar who came from that way, and he said he passed 10,000 men upon the way, marching down upon us." And the pig butcher added his tale, stammering through his thick lips in his haste to speak as he had been told.
I also heard it when I went out to the market to see how they stick their pigs in this city, and a butcher told me."
But Wang the Tiger was all softened and at ease, and for the first time he could not bring himself to think of war, and he smiled in his slight way and said, "I can trust my men, and let them come." And he sat down to drink a little tea before he ate. And he sat at a table beside a window, and it was broad day, and a thought came to him suddenly, and it was this, that there is a night at the end of every day, and he seemed to know it for the first time now. So meaningless had all other nights of his life been, except this one night. But there was one who heard what his trusty men said, and she stood by the curtain and looked through a crack of it, and she saw they were dismayed to see their leader sunk in some pleasing thought of his own. When Wang the Tiger rose and went out of the room to go to the one where food was eaten, she called clearly to the hair-lipped man, and she said, "Tell me all you have heard." He was very loath to talk to a woman of what was none of her affair, and he muttered and made as if he had nothing to tell until she said imperiously, "Do not play the fool with me, who have seen blood and fighting and battle and retreat these 5 years since I was grown. Tell me." Then, wondering and abashed before her bold eyes fixed on his, and not dropped as the eyes of women usually are, especially when they are newly wed and should be full of shame, he told her as though she had been a man what they all feared, and how they were in danger because more men marched against them than they had, and many of their men were untried in their loyalty if a battle came. She sent him away quickly then, saying he must beg Wang the Tiger to come to her. He came as he had never come to any summons, smiling more softly than anyone had ever seen him smile. She sat down upon the bed, and he sat down beside her, and took up the end of her sleeve and fingered it. And he was more abashed in her presence than she was in his, and he kept his eyes down, smiling. But she began to speak swiftly in her clear, somewhat piercing voice. "I am not a woman such as will stand in your way if there is a battle to be fought, and they tell me an army marches against you."
"Who told you?" he answered. "I will not trouble myself for 3 days. I have given myself 3 days."
"But if they come nearer in 3 days?"
An army cannot come 200 miles in 3 days. How can you know what day they started? The tale could not have reached the provincial seat in so short a time.
It could have, she said swiftly. Now here was a strange thing. These two, a man and a woman, could sit and talk of something far from love, and yet Wong the Tiger was as knit to her as he had been in the night. He was amazed that a woman could talk like this, for he had never talked with one before, and he had always thought them pretty children in tall bodies. And one reason why he feared them was because he did not know what they knew, nor what to say to them. He was so made that even with a woman paid for, he could not rush to her as a common soldier does. And half his diffidence with women was because he feared the speech he must make with them. But here he sat and talked with this woman as easily as though she were a man, and he listened to her when she said on, "You have fewer men than the provincial army has, and when a warrior finds his army smaller than his enemies, then he must use guile." At this he made his silent laugh and said in his gruff way,
"Well, I know that, or I would not have had you for mine now."
She dropped her eyes quickly at this, as though to veil something that might show itself in them, and she bit the edge of her lower lip, and she answered, "The simplest guile is to kill a man, but one must catch him first. The same simple guile will not do now." Then Wong the Tiger answered with pride,
"I will pit my men against thrice their number of state soldiers. I have trained them and taught them this whole winter, and hardened them with boxing and running and fencing, and with all feints of war, and none of them is afraid to die. Moreover, it is known what state soldiers are, and they will always turn to the strongest side. And doubtless the soldiers of this province are not better paid than any others like them."
Then she said with some impatience, and she drew her sleeve out of his fingers as she spoke,
"Still, you have no plan. Hear me. I have a plan made while we talked. There is this old magistrate you have guarded in his court. Use him as a hostage of a kind."
Now she spoke so earnestly and soberly that Wong the Tiger listened to her, yet was amazed that he did, for he was not a man who often took counsel with others, thinking himself sufficient for anything. But he listened, and she said,
"Take your soldiers out, and take him also. Enforce him and tell him what he is to say, that he shall say what you command. Let him go out to meet the provincial general with a trusty man on either side of him who will hear what he says. And if he does not say what you have told him, let them have their swords ready and plunge them into his bowels, and that shall be a sign for battle. But he has a gall no larger than a hen's. He will say what he is told. And let him say that nothing has been done without his consent, that the rumor of a rebellion is only because his old general rebelled. And if it had not been for you who delivered him, the seals of state would have been stolen and his own life gone."
Now this seemed excellent good guile to Wong the Tiger, and he listened with his eyes fastened on her face as she spoke. He saw the whole plan there before him, and he rose and laughed noiselessly to think what she was, and he went out to do what she had said, and she came close behind him. He commanded a trusty man to go and fetch the old magistrate out and bring him to the hall of audience. Then the woman had a fancy, and it was that they would go and sit in the audience room, he and she together, and let the old magistrate come before them. And Wong the Tiger was willing because they must frighten the old man thoroughly. So they sat themselves down on the dais, Wong the Tiger in a carven chair, and the woman beside him in another chair. Soon the old magistrate came tottering in between two soldiers, and he came out trembling and his robe thrown about him anyhow. He looked half-dazed about the hall, and he saw not one face he knew. No, even those servants of his who had returned looked away when he came in, and found this excuse and that to go away on some other business. There were only the faces of soldiers about the walls of the hall, and every man had his gun, and every man was loyal to Wong the Tiger. Then he looked up, his old lips trembling and blue, his mouth open, and he peered up, and there sat Wong the Tiger with his two brows drawn down, fierce and murderous to see, and beside him a strange woman whom the old magistrate had never seen or heard of, and he could not think where such an one as she had come from. He stood trembling and timid and ready to die, because such an end to his life had come to him as this, who was a man of peace and had been a Confucian scholar in his day. Then Wong the Tiger shouted in his rough and bitter way, with little courtesy,
"You are in my hand now, and you must follow my commands if you would live on here. We march against the army of the province tomorrow, and you are to go with us. And when we meet the army, you are to go first with my two trusty men and meet the general who comes against me. Tell him that you have chosen me your lord of war, and that I saved you from a rebellion in your own courts, and I stay here by your choice. My two trusty men will be there to hear all you say. If one word goes wrong, it is your end and your last word. But if you speak well, and as I tell you, you may return here and you may take your old place again upon this dais, and I will save your face for you, and it need not be known whose is the power here in these courts, for I have no mind to be a petty magistrate, nor will I have another here in your place, so long as you do what I command. What then could the weak old man do but give his promise? And he said, groaning,
I am caught on the end of your spear. Let it be as you say. I am an old man, and I have no son, and what does my life matter to me?
And he turned and went away shuffling and groaning as he went to his court where his old wife was, who had never come out at all. It was true he had no sons, for the two children she had given him died before they could speak. Now whether the thing could have been done as Wong the Tiger planned or not, none knows, but again his destiny helped him. It was now full spring, and over the land the willows budded again and the peach trees burst into swift bloom, and while farmers stripped off their winter coats and worked barebacked in the fields again, rejoicing in the mild winds and the warm, gentle sun upon their clogged flesh, the lords of war awoke also, and the restlessness of spring filled the countryside. And the lords of war awoke quarrelsome and full of lust of war against each other, and old troubles were burnished and made new, and old differences sharpened, and every man grew ambitious to achieve some new place for himself, while the fresh spring lasted. Now the chief seat of government of the nation at this time was in the hands of a weak, unready man, and there were many lords of war who cast longing eyes at that seat and thought how easy it would be to seize it. Many counted over such as stood in the way, and some banded together and consulted as to how they could take the power of the nation and unseat this unstable and ignorant man whom others had put there, and how they could place their own choice there to serve their own purpose. Among these lords of war, Wong the Tiger was still one of the very least, and he was scarcely known among the great ones, except as when men of battle gossip among themselves at some meeting or feast, and one might say, "Did you hear of the captain who split himself off from his old general and has set himself up in such and such a province? He is a good brave, it is said, and he is called the Tiger because of his angers and fierceness and his two black brows." Thus the chief lord of war in the province where Wong the Tiger now was had heard of him, and he had heard how Wong the Tiger had routed the leopard and had approved the deed. Now this chief lord was one of the great lords of war of the nation, and he was one of those who had it in his mind to unseat the weak ruler if he could, and if he could not put himself on the seat, at least to put his man there, so that the revenues of the nation would come into his own hands. During the spring, therefore, when restlessness rose everywhere, strange flowers of ambitions blossomed. There were proclamations pasted on city gates and on walls, and all such places where people pass, and these proclamations were sent out by the lord of war of that province. He said that since the ruler was so evil, and the people greatly oppressed, he could not endure such crimes as these before heaven. Although he was weak and witless, yet must he come forth to save the people. Having so written, he prepared for war. As for the people, since few of them could either read or write, they did not know this their Savior, but they groaned aloud because fresh taxes were put upon their lands and upon their harvests and upon their carts, and in the towns upon shops and goods. If they groaned aloud or complained, there were these minions of the Lord of War who heard them and cried out, "How ungrateful a people are you, who will not pay even for your own salvation! And who else should pay for the soldiers who are to fight for you and make you safe?" So the people paid what they must, however unwillingly, fearing if they did not either the wrath of the lord they had or of a new lord who might come in and conquer them and devour them afresh, being rapacious with his victory. Having determined on this war, therefore, the lord of the province was eager to marshal to him every small captain and general. So when he heard of the rebellion Wong the Tiger had made, he said to the civil ruler of the province, "Do not bear too heavily down upon that little new general whose name is Wong the Tiger, because I hear he is a good, angry, fierce fellow,
and I want such as he is under my ensign. This whole nation will divide itself, perhaps this spring, and if not this year, then next or next, and the lords of the north will declare against the lords of the south. Let this man be treated gently, then. Now, although it is said that lords of war should be subservient in a nation to the civil governors of the people, it is a thing known and proved that the power always goes to the armed man and the man with weapons. And how can a weaponless man, even though he has the right, oppose a man of war in the same region with him, who has soldiers to his command? Thus it was that destiny helped Wang the Tiger in that spring. For when the armies of state came marching against him, Wang the Tiger led his men out, and he sent the old magistrate ahead in his sedan, and he ambushed many good strong men near in case of treachery. When they came to a meeting place, the old magistrate came out of his sedan and stumbled through the dust of the country road. He went, dressed in his magistrate's robes, and leaning upon the two trusty men. The general who had been sent from the state came to meet him, and after the rites of courtesy had been observed, the old man said in his faltering way,
"You have it wrongly, my lord. This Wang the Tiger is no robber, but my own captain, and my new young general who protects my court, and he saved me from a rebellion in my own retinue."
Now, although the general did not believe this, having heard the truth from his spies, and although no one believed it, still he had his orders that Wang the Tiger was not to be offended, and that he was not to lose a man in a brawl so little as this, when every gun was needed for the greater war. When he heard what the old magistrate said, therefore, he only rebuked him slightly, saying,
"You should have sent word of this before, because we have been at an expense to bring men to punish what I thought was a rebel. There shall be a fine imposed on you to pay for the expense of an idle errand, and it is 10,000 pieces of silver."
When Wang the Tiger heard that this was all, he exulted very much, and he led his men back in triumph again. And he imposed in his turn a tax beyond what was usual upon all the salt in that place, and in less than twice 30 days he had the 10,000 pieces and some over, for that place had much salt, and it was even sent out to other places, and some said to other countries too. When this was over, Wang the Tiger was more strong than ever in his power, and he had not lost a man either. It seemed to him that for this honor was due to his woman, and he honored her for her wisdom. Yet he still did not know who or what she was. Passion was still his chief pastime with her, but he wondered sometimes what her story was. Yet if he asked her, she always put him off, saying, "It is a long tale, and I will tell you some day in a winter when there can be no war. But now it is spring, and time for battle, and for enlarging yourself, and not for idle talk." And she put him off restlessly, her eyes bright and hard. Then Wang the Tiger knew the woman was right, for over all the country the news came winged that there was to be such a war that spring among the lords of war as had not been in 10 years of wars. And the people were dismayed, not knowing from what point the war would strike them, hearing of it coming from here or coming there. Yet there was the land to till, and they tilled it, and in the cities the merchants had their shops, and men must live and children be fed. So the people went on about their lives, and if they groaned at a coming terror, they did their work while they waited to see what would happen to them. In his region all the eyes of the people were turned to Wang the Tiger, for his rule over them was now open and established, and they knew the taxes went through his hands. Although the old magistrate was still there for a show of state, he was an old image, and everything was decided by Wang the Tiger. Yes, Wang the Tiger even sat at the magistrate's right hand in the audience hall, and the old magistrate looked to him when the judgment moment came, and the money that used to be paid to the counselors now went into Wang the Tiger's hand, and to his trusty men. But Wang the Tiger was still himself, for if he took from the rich, if a poor man came and he knew it, he would let him speak for himself freely. There were many poor who praised him, but all the people turned to Wang the Tiger in this spring to see what he would do, for they knew if he joined in the great war, they must pay the soldiers he would need and buy his guns. As for Wang the Tiger, he had considered the matter well, alone and with his woman and also with his trusty men, but he was still puzzled as to what was best for him. The lord of war of the province had sent out commands to every little separate general and captain and small lord of war and said, "Follow under my ensign with your men, for now is the hour when we can all rise up a step or two in the tide of war."
But Wong the Tiger did not know whether to come at his call or not, because he could not see which side would win. If he cast in his name with the losing side, he would set himself back and perhaps ruin himself, seeing he was so newly risen up. So he took thought for himself, and he thought, and he sent out his spies to see and to hear and to find out what was the stronger and the winning side. And he said while they were out he would delay and declare himself for no one, and he would wait until the war was fought nearly to an end, and the victory plain, and then he would make haste to declare himself, and so on the last swelling wave he might ride with others to its crest, and not lose a man or a gun either. He sent out his spies then, and waited. In the night he talked about it with his woman, for their love and his ambition were linked in the strangest way, and when he had slaked his thirst and lay at his ease, he talked with her as he had never done to anyone in his life. He poured out to her every plan he had, and he ended every dream with this saying, "Thus will I do, and when you give me a son, he will be the meaning for it all." But she never answered this hope of his, and when he pressed on it, she grew restless and spoke of some everyday thing and again she said, "Have you your plans ready and made for the last battle?" And she said often, "Guile is the best warfare, and the best battle is the one at the end when victory is sure and swift." And Wong the Tiger never noticed any coldness in her at all. He was so hot himself. All through that spring he waited, therefore, although waiting chafed him in usual times, and he could never have borne it now if he had not had this woman new to him and there at his hand. Summer came on, and the wheat was cut, and all through the valleys the sound of the flails beat all day into the still, hot sunshine. In the fields where the wheat had stood, the sorghum cane grew tall and rank and put forth its tassels, and while Wong the Tiger waited, wars sprang up everywhere, and this general and that in the south banded together for the moment like generals of the north, and still Wong the Tiger waited. And he hoped greatly that the generals of the south would not win, for it went against some gorge in him to link himself ever again with those little dark and stunted men. It went against him so much that he brooded sometimes, and said to himself sullenly that if the south won, he would go and hide in his mountains for a while, and wait for a new turn of war. But he did not wait in complete idleness. He trained his men with fresh zeal, and he enlarged his army once more, and enrolled in it many good young fellows who came to him, and over the new ones he set the old and other soldiers, and his army swelled to 10,000 men. And to pay for this he added somewhat to his taxes on wine, and on salt, and on traveling merchants. His only trouble at this time was that he had not enough guns, and he saw he must do one of two things. Either he must get guns by guile, or he must conquer some little near captain and take his guns and ammunition. Now this was because guns were very hard to find, being foreign things and brought in from foreign parts. And Wong the Tiger had not thought of this when he had chosen his region an inland region, and he had no coastal port he controlled, and other ports were guarded, so that he could not hope to smuggle guns through them. Moreover, he knew no foreign tongue, nor had he any near him who did. And so he had no way yet to deal with the foreign merchants, and so it seemed to him that after all he must have a little battle somewhere, for many of his men were without guns. One night he told this to his woman, and she took a sudden interest and put her mind to it, for often she could be listless and paid no heed to him at all. Now when she put her mind to it, she said very soon, "But I thought you said you had a brother who is a merchant."
"I do have such a one," said Wong the Tiger, wondering. "But he is a grain merchant, and not a merchant for guns."
"Yes, but you see nothing," she cried at him, in the impatient, high way she had. "If he is a merchant and deals with sea coasts, he can buy guns and smuggle them in as goods somehow. I do not know how, but there must be a way." Now Wong the Tiger thought this over a while, and again it seemed to him that this was the cleverest woman, and he made a plan on what she had said. The next day he called his pocked nephew to him, grown tall in this past year, and he kept the youth by him continually for small special things he needed to have done. And he said,
"Go to your father, and pretend you are home for a visit and nothing more. But when you are alone with him, tell him I need 3,000 guns, and I am hampered sorely because I have not them. Men grow everywhere, but not guns for them, and they are useless to me without each man his gun.
Tell him he is a merchant, and one who deals with the sea coast, and he can think of a way for me. I send you because the thing must be kept secret, and you are my own blood." The youth was glad enough to go, and he promised secrecy eagerly, and he was proud with his mission. And again Wong the Tiger waited. But he still received men under his ensign, only he chose his men carefully, and tested each as to whether or not he feared to die.
Chapter 18. The lad went winding his way homeward then, over the countryside. He had taken off his soldier's garb and had put on the clothing of a farmer's son, and with these coarse blue garments and his face brown and pocked, he looked nothing but a country lad, and fit grandson for Wang Lung. He rode upon his old white ass, with a ragged coat folded under him for a saddle, and he kicked the ass under the belly with his bare feet to hasten it sometimes. No one who saw him riding thus, and often half asleep under the hot sun of summer, would have dreamed that he carried a message that was to bring 3,000 guns into that peaceful country. But when he did not sleep, he sang his song of soldiers and war, for he loved to sing. And when he did this, a farmer would look up at him uneasily from his work in the fields and stare after the youth. And once a farmer shouted after him,
"A curse on you to be singing a soldier's ditty! Do you want to bring the black crows around us again?"
But the youth was gay and careless, and he spat here and there in the dust of the road to show how careless he was, and to show he would go on singing if he wished to sing. The truth was he did not know any other songs than these, having been so long among reckless and fighting men, and it cannot be expected that soldiers will sing the same songs that farmers sing in their quiet fields. On the third day at noon he came to his home, and as he slid off his ass at the place where the side street parted from the main street, there was his eldest cousin lounging along, and he stared and stopped in a yawn he was making, and said in greeting,
"Well, and are you a general yet?"
Then the pocked lad called back quietly and wittily, "No, but I have taken at least the first degree." This he said to mock his cousin a little, because everyone knew how Wong the landlord and his lady had always talked a great deal of how they would make a scholar of their son, and how next season he was to go up for examination at such and such a seat of learning, and so become a great man. But the season went, and the year passed into another, and he never went. Now the pocked youth knew this cousin of his was on his way not to any school but to some tea-house, being just up, doubtless, from his bed, and languid after the night he had had somewhere. But the son of Wong the landlord was dainty and scornful, and he surveyed his cousin and said,
"At least being a first-degree general has not put a silk coat on your back."
And he walked on without waiting to hear any answer, swaying himself as he walked so that his own silk robes, the color of the green of a willow tree newly leaved, swayed also with his lordly steps. But the pocked youth grinned and stuck his tongue out toward his cousin's back and went to his own door. When he stepped into the court of his own home, all was as it ever was. It was time for the noon meal, and the door was open into the house, and he saw his father sitting down alone to the table to eat, and the children ran anywhere and ate as they always did. And his mother stood at the door with her bowl to her lips and her chopsticks pushing the food into her mouth, and as she chewed she chattered to a neighbor woman, who had come in to borrow something, about a salt fish that a cat had stolen the night before, although it was hung high on a beam, too. When she saw the son, she shouted at him,
"Well, you are back in time to eat, and you could not have struck it better."
And she went on with her chatter. The youth grinned at her, but he said nothing except to call her name out, and he went inside, and his father nodded to him, a little surprised, and the son called his name dutifully and then went and found himself a bowl and a pair of chopsticks, and filled his bowl from the food on the table, and then went to one side, and sat down edgewise on his seat as sons should do if they sit in the presence of those above them. When they had eaten, the father poured a little tea into his rice bowl, but sparingly, for he was sparing in all he did, and he drank it down in small, meager sips. And then he said to his son,
"Do you bring any word?"
And the son said,
"Yes, I do, but I cannot tell you here."
This he said because his brothers and sisters crowded around him and stared at him silently, since he was strange to them, and they listened eagerly for any word he might say. By now the mother was back also to fill her bowl again, for she was a very hearty one to eat, and ate a long time after her husband was finished and gone, and she stared too at her son and said, "You have grown a good 10 inches, I swear. And why have you a ragged coat like that on? Does your uncle give you no better? What do they feed you to make you grow like that? Good meat and wine, I swear." And the lad grinned again and said, "I have good clothes, but I did not wear them this time, and we eat meat every day." At this, Wang the merchant was aghast, and he cried out with unwonted interest, "What, does my brother give his soldiers meat every day?" The lad hastened to say, "No, but now only because he prepares them for a war, and he wants them fierce and full of blood. But I have meat because I do not live with the common soldiers, and I may eat what my uncle and his woman leave in their bowls, I and the trusty men." At this his mother said avidly, "Tell me about that woman of his. It was a strange thing he did not ask us to the wedding."
"He did," said Wang the merchant hastily, seeing no end to this talk if it began. "Yes, he did ask us, but I said we would not go. It would have cost a pile of silver, and you would have wanted new clothes and this and that for a show if you had gone."
To this the woman said with much spirit and in a loud voice,
"Well, and you old miser, I never go anywhere, and—"
But Wang the merchant cleared his throat and said to his son, "Come with me, for there is no peace here." And he rose and brushed his children aside, but not urgently, and he went out and his son followed him. Wang the merchant walked ahead of his son down the street to a small tea-house where he did not often go, and he chose a table in a quiet corner. But the house was almost empty, for it was an hour when there were not many guests, for farmers had sold their loads and gone home, and city guests had not come in for the afternoon's talk. There in peace, then, did Wang the merchant's son tell him his mission. Wang the merchant listened very closely to it all, and he said not a word until his son had had his say. And when it was over, he did not let his face change. No, where Wang the landlord would have been astonished and rolled his eyes and sworn it was a thing impossible to do, Wang the merchant had by now grown so secretly rich that nothing was impossible to him, and if he ever hesitated, it was to see if the thing would benefit him or not when done. He had his money in all sorts of places, and men borrowed of him for everything they could. He even had his money in Buddhist temples, loaned to priests on security of temple lands, for in these days the people were not devout as they had been, and only women, and usually old women too, were the ones to heed the gods, and many temples grew poor and left off their flourishing estate. And Wang the merchant had his money in ships upon the rivers and upon the seas, and he had money in a railway, and he had a very good sum in a brothel in the city, although he was never a guest at his own brothel, and his elder brother never dreamed that when he went to play at that great new house opened but a year or so ago, that it was his own brother's house. But it was a business that brought good return, and Wang the merchant reckoned on the common nature of men. Thus his money flowed out in 100 secret channels, and if he had recalled it suddenly, thousands would have suffered. Yet he ate no more than he ever did, and no better, and he did not game as any man will who has more than he can eat and wear, nor did he let his sons wear silk coats. And seeing him and how he lived, none would have dreamed how rich he was. Therefore he could think of 3,000 foreign guns and not be astounded, as Wang the landlord would have been. Yes, looking at those two brothers, if one had met them together in the street, one would have said that Wang the landlord was the very rich one, for he spent his money so easily, and he was so monstrous fat and rolling in his silk and satin robes and his furs, and his sons all silk-clad too, except the little hunchback, who lived with Pear Blossom and grew to quiet manhood there beside her, forgotten day after day. So Wang the merchant pondered for a time in silence, and he said at last, "Did my brother say what security I am to have for so much money as this to buy these guns? I ought to have good security, seeing that it is against the law to buy them." And the youth said, "He said, 'Tell my brother he must take all the land I have left for security, if he cannot trust my word until I can collect revenue to pay for them. I have my hand over all revenues in this region, but I cannot give out a vast sum at once and not make my men suffer.' 'I do not want more land,' said Wang the merchant, reflecting. 'And this has been a hard year here, near to famine, and land is cheap. All he has left will not be enough. His wedding fee ate deep into the lands.' Then the youth said earnestly, and his little bright black eyes shone in his face, he was so earnest.
"Father, it is true my uncle is a very great man. You should see how everyone fears him. But he is a good man, too, for he does not kill only to kill. Even the ruler of the province fears him. He is not afraid of anything. No, who but he would have dared to marry a woman whom everybody calls a fox? And if you give him these guns, it will mean more power to him than ever."
Now the words of his own son cannot move a father too much, but still there was some truth in this, and the thing that decided Wang the merchant was that it would pay him well to have a brother who was a powerful lord of war. Yes, if the time of a great war came on such as was rumored in these years, and if the war moved here, and who can tell how a war will move, his great possessions might be seized and despoiled, if not by enemy soldiers, then perhaps by the lawless poor. For Wang the merchant now had his wealth no more in lands, and the lands he had were as nothing beside his houses and shops and money-lending business, and such wealth may be taken away so quickly in a time when men are free to despoil, that in a few days a rich man may be made poor if he has no secret power from somewhere to help him and protect him, in a sudden need such as may come at any time. So he thought to himself that these guns might be a protection for him too one day, and he thought a while longer of how he could purchase them and how smuggle them in. This he could do, for he now owned 2 small ships of his own to carry rice to an outer country nearby. It was against the law to send rice out in this way, and he had to do it secretly. But he made a great profit on it, and it paid him to give bribes, for the rulers were lax, and if they were paid, they overlooked his 2 little ships, which he kept small on purpose, and vented their anger and zeal for law upon 4 ships, or again upon some others that did not bring them any good. And Wang the merchant thought of his 2 ships coming back empty sometimes from that other country, or else only half loaded with cotton stuffs and foreign knick-knacks, and he thought he could manage easily enough to smuggle 4 guns among those wares. And if he were caught, he would put money out here and there, and he would give his 2 captains something to close their mouths and make silence worthwhile for all. Yes, he could do this. Then he said to his son, looking about first to see that none was near, no guest or officious servant, and he spoke through his teeth without moving his lips, and very softly,
"I can get the guns to the coast, and even to a certain point where the railway runs nearest my brother, but how can I get them to him over a day and more of dry land, and no way of travel except by foot or beast's back?"
Now Wang the tiger had not said anything of this to the youth, so he could only scratch his head foolishly and stare at his father, and he said,
"I must go back and ask him that."
And Wang the merchant said,
"Tell him I will manage to put the guns into goods of another sort, and marked with other names, and put them at a point, and then he must get them somehow from there."
So with this the lad went back to his uncle, and he went the very next day. But that night he slept in his own home, and his mother cooked him a dish he loved of little steamed loaves of bread with garlic and pork inside, a very dainty dish. He ate himself full of these, and what were left he thrust into his bosom to eat on the way. Then, seated upon his ass, he wound his way back again to Wang the tiger.
Chapter 19. There happened during the next month a thing such as Wang the tiger, in his arrogance, would not have believed true if he had been told. The fever of war spread over that whole region when it was known that great lords above waged a war and split the country into 2 parts. In that fever, little warlike spirits arose everywhere, and men who were idle and without work, or those who would not work, and lovers of any adventure, and sons who did not love their parents, and gamesters who lost in their gambling, and every little discontented man seized on this time to come out and make a showing of some sort. In this very region where Wang the tiger now ruled in the name of the old magistrate, these rebellious men joined themselves into bands, and they gave themselves the name of the Yellow Turbans, because they wore strips of yellow about their heads, and they began to prey upon the country. At first they did it in small, timid ways, exacting from some poor farmer food as they passed, or they went into a village inn and ate, and went on without paying, or only partly paying for their meal, showing such fierce looks and raising their voices so high and quarrelsome that the innkeeper was afraid of.